Hello, everyone, and good Chodesh. And some of what I'm going to say, not all of it, might be, if you've gone to other shiurim of mine recently, you might have heard some of it. So I ask for your apologies. I want to begin with a little story that I think encapsulates the holiday season that we've just finished. There was a peasant in a Russian village, a Hasidish village, who was very attracted to what was going on in the village every week, every Shabbos. There was a Fabrengen, people were drinking and dancing, and there were parties and everything else. So he decided he would become Jewish. He wanted to pass himself off as a Jew. And he did so at a very opportune time of year. It was around Rosh Chodesh Shvat. So if you think about it, Rosh Chodesh Fabrengen, Tu B'Shvat, Rosh Chodesh Adar, Purim, Rosh Chodesh Nisan, there's an Ibrahim, you have an extra Adar, Pesach, Gevaldik, Gevaldik, drinking, eating, dancing, singing, wonderful, wonderful religion. So he tells his friend Ivan that Ivan ought to join this religion as well. So it took Ivan a little bit of time, but Ivan finally joined after Shavuos, and the next month is Rosh Chodesh Tammuz. It's already the 3 weeks approaching. They didn't have a big simcha. Then the 3 weeks, the 9 days, no meat, no music, no weddings, etc., no drinking of wine. He doesn't understand. He entered this religion with the promise that everything would be joyous and wonderful. And instead, he discovers all it is restriction after restriction. He goes over to his friend and he says to his friend, "What's going on? You sold me a bill of goods?" And his friend scratches his head and says, "Ever since you joined, I don't know what happened. Things have been going downhill." And the emes is, all of us know that that indeed is what Yiddishkeit is. Not downhill, I don't mean that, but in terms of moments of joy, moments of sadness, moments of introspection, moments of reaching out. Really, a Jewish life is exactly what Shlomo HaMelech describes in the book of Koheles. La kol zman, everything has its time. A time to cry, a time to laugh, a time to be silent, a time to speak, a time to destroy. We sometimes have to destroy things in order to go on. A time to rebuild. Life is complex, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to serve Him with every type of emotional response. You know, the problem basically is all of us tend to have a dominant characteristic. People are extroverted, introverted. People are shy. People are introspective. People are outgoing. And we tend to take whatever that is and serve God only with that. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants the shy person to learn how to be outgoing. And He wants the outgoing person to learn how to be reflective. And He wants the levitic person to know how to calm down sometimes. And the person that's overly placid to get emotionally excited about things. And thus HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to develop the entire palette of colors that exist within the spectrum of the neshama, to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu as a total person. Just as Avraham Avinu, whose fundamental midah was chesed, Hashem forced him to develop the capacity to be cruel when necessary. The Akedah, sending away Yishmael. Just as Yaakov Avinu's dominant midah is described as truth, and Yaakov is forced by HaKadosh Baruch Hu to engage in deception. Yitzchak's a bit more complicated. There's a pshat for that as well. Time does not allow us to go into that in full. But the whole concept is God does not want us to be automatic pilot people. God does not want us to simply have a one-size-fit-all response to the diversities and the challenges of life. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to develop every type of koach and know how to serve. And Rav Huttner actually writes that all of these opposite emotions are really connected. If a person cannot cry on Tisha B'Av, they cannot rejoice on Simchas Torah. Because if you don't feel the sadness of being far from Hashem, how can you feel the joy of being close to Hashem if it doesn't make such a big difference? If you don't feel the joy of closeness, then what is so sad about distance? So we look at them as opposites. But in fact, it's all the same. You don't feel strongly about the joy of something unless you feel sadness when you don't have it, etc. So this is Lakol Zman. Shlomo HaMelech is not only talking about the world, But he's talking about the human being who is described as an olam katan, a small world. That within the olam katan that each and every one of us are, there's lakol zaman. There must be a zaman for everything. In fact, Rav Volba Zatzal has an essay in which he even says, there is a zaman for insanity in the world. Sometimes a person ought to be driven crazy by what's going on. If you're not driven crazy, you're insane. La kol zaman, everything has a zaman. But what's interesting is, it is not only the course of the year in which all of these different things happen, but we just had a month where it all happened in 3 or 4 weeks. The month of Tishrei. Besides the 3-day Yom Tov, and once again, we all had it much easier than Chutz La'aretz people that had three patterns of 3-day Yom Tovim. But putting that aside, look at the conflicting roller coaster of emotions that the month of Tishrei calls upon us to have. There is the Eiman, the Pachad, and the Yira of the Yom Hadin, encapsulated, of course, in an Asana Tokef. And what can I say? Already in this year, there are people I know who died. Obviously, there was a Gemar Din on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur of Mi Yichya. It's not a joke. Mi Yichya Umi Yomus. Charada Pachat. And then we have introspection and Cheshbon HaNefesh as we look into our lives. And then there is sadness and Yogon over our Averos. And then is the Zaman Simchasenu of Sukkot calling upon us, culminating in Simchas Torah, Shmini Atzeres, a crescendo of joy. It's like we're bipolar, manic depressive. All of these different emotions. But that's because Tishrei is the first month of the year. It gives a person the kochos and ability to deal with whatever comes during the year. And in the year, there's going to be sadness and joy, and there's going to be introspection and extroversion. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu front loads it in the first month of the year. So we develop the capacities, we get the spiritual kochos that will give us the ability to deal with whatever the year is going to give us in the future. And that is the roller coaster of Tishrei. But after the roller coaster of Tishrei, we come to the dry season, paradoxically, because Cheshvan is the rainy month. But it's the dry season. It's often said, although historically it's probably not emeth, so I'm not going to pass it off as a historical truth, but it's often said that the reason the name of the month is Mar Cheshvan is because it is bitter Cheshvan. It is the only month of the year that does not have sacred time. It does not have a Yom Tov. Kislev has Chanukah, and Teves has the end of Chanukah, and Shvat has Tu B'Shvat. So we're stretching it a little bit over there. Adar has Purim, and Nisan has Pesach. Iyar, if you're a Zionist, has Yom HaTzmaut. And if you're not a Zionist, it has Pesach Sheni. Again, a bit of a stretch, but Pesach Sheni is a Yom Tov. See what? Yom Yerushalayim, that's right. Then we get into further distinctions. Lag Bomer, yeah, Lag Bomer, that's correct, Lag Bomer. And then we have Sivan, which is Shavuos. Tammuz, it's a little harder to figure out, but the truth of the matter is, interestingly enough, even the fast days, when the Beis HaMikdash is going to be rebuilt, are going to become Yomim Tovim. And therefore, in Av, it is not only the 15th of Av that was the happiest day of the year, but even Tisha B'Av is going to be a day of Simcha and Yeshua. When Mashiach comes, so we count that as a Yom Tov. Elul actually doesn't have any Yomim Tovim either, but since it's a Hachana for the big Yomim Tovim that are coming up, so it's already, you're thinking about the Chagim. But then we come to Cheshvan. Cheshvan, bereft, empty. Let me share with you a passage from Sefer Yetzirah. Sefer Yetzirah is a very, very early Kabbalistic work. According to some opinions, it was actually authored by none other than Adam HaRishon himself. Others put it a little later, they put it to Avraham Avinu. And Sefer Yetzirah discusses the process, how HaKadosh Baruch Hu used the spiritual letters of the Aleph Beis to create the DNA of the universe. And in fact, Chazal tell us that there were Amoraim, Tanaim and Amoraim, who used the formulas of Sefer Yetzirah to make a cow or make a calf on Erev Shabbos, which they would shecht. And these are the formulas by which you could make a golem, if you so desired, if you knew how to do it. The Maral, the Vilna Gaon, etc. And in fact, you can even get the Sefer Yetzirah in English. Ari Kaplan translated, Oliver Shalom translated Sefer Yetzirah. But as I say, I would not try to make a golem with it. It'll be somewhat, it'll be much more devastating than those chemistry sets that kids used to have where, you know, everything blew up. This could have much more drastic consequences. But one of the things that Sefer Yetzirah does is every month of the year is connected to a letter of the Aleph Beis, a different letter of the Aleph Beis, and it is linked with a certain one of the five senses, sight, hearing, or the like. And Sefer Yetzirah does not explain the connection, but we have Svarim like the Sfas Emes, and in particularly Rav Tzadok of Lublin, who every Rosh Chodesh tries to explain the Kesher between that letter and that sense and that Chodesh. We come to the month of Cheshvan, and the month of Cheshvan is connected to the letter Nun. In the language of Sefer Yetzirah, Himlech Os Nun Ala Cheshvan. HaKadosh Baruch Hu made the letter Nun to be the Melech of Cheshvan, U'mishatvai, and he combines it with Reyach, the chush of Reyach, smell, olfactory. So Cheshvan is Nun plus Reyach. What's the Shaychus? What is Nun and Reyach? What do they have to do with Cheshvan? So Rav Tzadok is Masber, that Nun symbolizes in Judaism, in Kabbalah in particular, the idea of Nefilah, falling down, losing something. I'm sure all of you know the famous Gemara in Brachos, Rav Yochanan's statements that Ashrei, every verse of Ashrei begins with a different letter of the Aleph Beis. That's Tehillim Kuf Mem Hei. Actually, Ashrei is not part of Ashrei, right? Ashrei Yosher Yisecha is from a different chapter of Tehillim. But Ashrei begins, Kuf Mem Hei begins, Tehillah LeDavid, Arimimcha Elokei HaMelech Aleph. The only letter that's missing is the letter Nun. Because we have Malchuscha, Malchus Kol Olamim, and the next one is Someich Hashem L'chol Anokvim. We skip the letter Nun. So Rav Yochanan says, why is there no Nun in Ashrei? And the answer that the Gemara gives is, because Nun represents Nefila, falling down, being defeated, losing things. As Amos said, Nafla Laisaisif, talking about the Gullus, Nafla Laisaisif Kum Basulat Yisrael, she has fallen, she will not get up again, daughter of Israel. David HaMelech, with Ruach HaKodesh, did not want to begin a Pasuk with the idea of defeat, of loss, of spiritual downer. And that is why he only mentions Nun in the next verse. Someich Hashem L'chol HaNoflim. Hashem will support all who fall. Now, the Gemara in Brachos then goes on and says, however, that everything depends on your attitude, because it depends on where you put the comma or the esnachta in the pasuk. Because you can read that pasuk in almost two ways. You could read it, Nafla, she has fallen. Lo sosif kum, she'll never get up again. A very bad, ominous prophecy about the Jewish people, if we don't do tshuva. But the Marava Amri, in the West, since the Gemara was written in Babel, so the West is the reference to Eretz Yisrael. In Eretz Yisrael, we have to be optimists here. We punctuate the pasuk differently. Instead of Nafla, she has fallen, Lo Saisif Kum, she won't get up, we punctuate it, Nafla Lo Saisif, she shall no longer fall, Kum, rise, right? So everything depends on the attitude. Everything depends on commas. So if your kids tell you punctuation is not important, although modern Hebrew tends not to have that much punctuation, but be it as it may, a comma makes all the difference, an attitude makes all the difference. But the Gemara does say that Nun is Nefila. So Rav Tzadok says, if Nun is suggestive of Nefila, we understand why Nun is the dominant koach of the month of Cheshvan. Here we have achieved so many madregas, each of us according to our own madrega. Korva Lashem, Yom Kippur and the joy of Sukkot. And then we get hit. It's as if our plane crashed. We run out of steam. Our engine runs out of gasoline. We hit brutal reality. The mundaneness, the boredom, or the anxiety of everyday life. And obviously, a person is going to have a sense of nephila. I've lost it. Everything I've achieved has simply been taken away from me. I got to start thinking about all the things I have to do tshuva for next Yom Kippur. Or maybe I don't want to think about it till Erev Yom Kippur or Erev Rosh Hashanah next year. We're kind of finished with the tshuva business. You know, we had that little season, but you know, now we can get back to life. But it's so disheartening. It's nephila. So, Cheshvan is the month of nephila. But Rav Tzadok says, what will save you from nephila? The Chush HaReyach. Because what is Reyach? Reyach is what lingers when the mamushas is gone. If you had a nice roast chicken or a barbecue, even when all the food is eaten up, there will be a nice fragrance, aroma that's going to linger. And it can give you a little bit of a geschmack, a little bit of a connection. Rav Tzadok says, Cheshvan, all the meat is gone. But the reyach of the Yomim Tovim is still here, spiritually, to sustain us, to give us chizuk in the land. Yeah, right, so that's the idea of what Cheshvan is. Cheshvan is the month of falling down. It's the month of losing things. But spiritually, God has given us the fragrance that still allows us to be sustained. Now, one might, if I could be hyperbolic here, one might say that Cheshvan is in fact the most important month of the year. One might say, although it's with a lot of exaggeration, Cheshvan is even more important than Tishrei. Because Tishrei develops our capacity to be holy when we're inspired, when there is sacred moments of time. But the real test of what Yom Tov has done for us is not how I am when it's Yom Tov, but how I am when I confront ordinary life. Because Kedusha is meaningful only when you can take it into the here and now, where the rubber meets the road. The Chazon Ish used to give an interesting parable, used to give a mashal. He would say, imagine if you have a pot of water, and the pot of water is only half full, only a third full. You put it on the fire. If you leave it there long enough, it's going to bubble over, it's going to overflow. It'll look like it's full to the top. Because when it's on the fire, even a pot that is mainly empty will give the appearance of being full. How do you know if a pot is really full? When you take it off the fire and it's no longer hot, if the water still spills over the sides, you know it's full. The Chazon Ish says, that is exactly our relationship to Yom Tov. If I am Ruchni, if I'm spiritual, if I'm holy, when I'm in the atmosphere of Kedusha, that doesn't mean I'm full of Kedusha. That just means I'm moved by the emotions of the moment. But if something is permanent, you carry it over. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us all a little bit of a test. You've been through an Elul, a Rosh Hashanah, a Yom Kippur, a Sukkot, a Shmini Atzeres Simchas Torah. Now I'm going to take you out of that and put you into regular life. Have we been changed? Have we been transformed? And in many ways, that is the harder ultimate avodas Hashem. In fact, by Yom Kippur, if you recall the Kohen Gadol service on Yom Kippur, you will recall that he has two uniforms. He has the white uniform of linen, pure linen, when he goes into the Holy of Holies, the Kodesh HaKodashim. And then he has a gold uniform, which is his standard uniform when he does stuff that he would do during the normal service outside of the Kodesh HaKodashim. And he changes his uniforms 5 times during the day. Gold, white, and then gold. And that is the whole Yom Kippur service. Every time he changes from one uniform to another uniform, he must go to the mikveh to purify himself. to consecrate himself, to ready himself for the great mission that he has. So here's the obvious question. I understand when he goes from gold to white, meaning he goes from his normal sacrificial duties, and he's about to enter the Kodesh HaKadoshim, I understand how he has to prepare himself, he has to dedicate himself, he has to focus, he goes to the mikveh to come to the Kodesh HaKadoshim in a state of purity. But when he's in the Kodesh HaKadoshim and he's reached the highest pinnacle, and now he's about to do the regular service in the Beis HaMikdash, and he's going to change from the pure white linen to the regular gold vestments, why must he go to the mikveh then? He's going down in madregos. He's going down in levels. What is he preparing himself for? The answer is he's not going down in levels. He's going up in levels. Because he now has the awesome job of taking the Kodesh HaKadoshim and bringing it into this world. And that's a higher level. It is easier to be in the Kodesh HaKadoshim and be holy than to take the holiness of that experience and bring it into everyday life. In reality, I do want to give you the good news. The Maral tells us, and again, these are generalizations, so obviously every case is different, that women actually have an enhanced ability to sanctify ordinary life. And he shows this in a very interesting way. All of us know, if you've, those of you that are married probably heard it at your own Sheva Brachas or your children's, and those who aren't married probably heard it at some other Sheva Brachas as well. It's a very well-known, famous Gemara that the name for man and woman, Ish and Isha, share two letters, Aleph Shin. The man gets the letter Yud in the middle, and the woman gets the Hay. And Yud and Hey, Ka, we pronounce it, is one of God's names. Yud and Hey. So the Gemara says a beautiful thing. When a man and a woman bring Hashem into their marriage, then everybody is functioning properly. But if you take the Yud and the Hey out of the marriage, then they become a selfish, all-consuming Aish, an all-consuming fire, in which each person's egotism and selfishness will just destroy themselves and destroy the others. Beautiful thought, right? Hashem is in the marriage. Men are men, women are women. Everyone is doing what Hashem wants them to do. Everyone is living their life in the right way. Take out Hashem, I become Aish, my spouse becomes Aish. All of that is beautiful, all of that is true. This is what Chazal say. But the Maharal wants to go one level deeper. And that is, why does the man get the Yud of Hashem's name and the woman get the Hay? Right? Why is it divided that way? And the Maharal explains the following. The Gemara in Menachos says, and this again is based on Sefer Yetzirah, that Hashem created this world through the spiritual power of the letter Hay, and Hashem created the world to come through the spiritual power of the letter Yud. Yud, and we don't know exactly what that means, of course, but Yud is the koach, is the power of Olam Haba, and He is the power of Olam Hazeh, and that is the meaning of the pasuk, Ki Baka Hashem Tzur Olamim. By Ka, Yud and He, God created Olamim, two worlds, Olam Hazeh Behei, Olam Ababiyah. That's a Gemara in Maseches Menachos. Maral asks, why is Olam Haba Yud and Olam Hazeh Hey? So he says Yud is the least physical of any letter of the alphabet, just a tiny little dot. That represents the absence of physicality. Pure ruchnius, pure spirituality, is what a Yud is. Hey, Maral wants to say, is actually a composite letter. It is two letters combined in one. If you can visualize a hey, it's a dalet, and the left leg of the hey he calls a yud. I would think it's a vav, but he wants to look at it as a yud. Dalet and yud. Now, dalet represents the physicality of this world, because matter exists in four dimensions: length, width, height, and time. So Einstein did not invent the idea of time being an aspect of matter. Actually, Maral didn't invent it either. It's much, much earlier in all of our Makoros. So Dalet represents pure physicality. Yud represents pure spirituality. So what is Hey? Bringing the Yud into the Dalet. Bringing the power of Kedusha and spirituality into the physical. Now here is what the Maral says. Maral says, men, again this is a generalization, men tend to be damaged by their encounter with the physical world. The physical world brings out competitiveness, testosterone, jealousies, rivalries. So just like a person with emphysema needs to go to 100% oxygen, so men need the yud. Men need the kolel. Men need the yeshiva. Men need to get away from the world to some degree, because the world drags them down. A woman's koach, the Maral suggests, is that she can take the physicality of the world, the details of raising children, of running a house, whatever it would be, the honoring of Shabbos and Yom Tov in an aesthetic way, and she can show that God is served not by rejecting or escaping the mundane, but by embracing it and by elevating it. And ultimately, the man is supposed to learn this lesson from his wife. That is exactly the notion of Ezer Kenegdo, to be a helpmate, to teach the male of the species, and we are a little dense, that life does not have to exist in a black and white, meaning spiritual is all good and physical is all evil. But there is a capacity to spiritualize the physical. It's an important idea too, because it's true that in life there is much drudgery, whether it's in the work world, whether it's in the raising of children. There are many things that don't seem to be peak spiritual experiences. But in truth, if one just, before a person washes a dish or goes to work or does carpool or goes on a bus, whatever it is, if a person, man or woman, has a little meditation that I'm doing this to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I'm doing this to bring nachas to my Creator, I'm doing this to be a Kiddush Hashem, I'm doing this to raise money so I can support my family, whatever it would be, then that becomes Avodas Hashem. That becomes a holy activity. You can have two people doing the same thing, and for one person it's a drudgery, and it's not a mitzvah, and the other person has transformed the very mundaneness of what they're doing into a spiritual act of Avodas Hashem. Now, it's no accident that the gematria of Hey, the numerical equivalent of Hey, is only 50% that of Yud. Yud is 10, Hey is 5. And that means basically the ecstasy and the excitement of Kedusha is certainly much greater when we don't have to confront the challenges of everyday life. Right? I could sit on, like the Buddhist, you sit on top of a flagpole for 25 years and you contemplate and you reach very, very high levels. But and once you're involved in daily life, there's less intensity. That's very, very true. But it's the Ratzon Hashem that we bring Kedusha to the Gashmias. It is the Ratzon Hashem, as the Medrash says, as the Bala Tanya quotes a number of times, Hashem wants a dira b'tachtonim, that means he wants a dwelling place, specifically in the lower worlds, in the material worlds. To understand that every single thing we do has an atmosphere, can be turned into something holy, something sacred, something noble, something good. And if it doesn't make the New York Times or the Jerusalem Post or even the Atei Neman, in an ultimate sense, that doesn't make a difference. Because the real victories in life are the victories over our midos, over our yetzer hara, over the kavanas that take us away from serving Hashem. And nobody has to necessarily know what those are, except the only one that matters, and that's HaKadosh Baruch Hu. and HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows. And that should give us chizuk, that should give us strength as we confront the challenges of ordinary life. And once again, as I say, this is not only a message to women, this is certainly a message to men and to all of us, men and women. But women, the Maharal tells us, have this koach to intuitively understand that it is what we do in our private lives that are ultimately more significant than whatever public things we manage to achieve, whatever fame, fortune, even within the firm world, etc. And this is the greatness, because without the cultivation of the bias, of the holiness of the home, there is nothing else in Am Yisrael, nothing that will ever be able to be done in any positive way. The idea of Akeres HaBayis is not a cliché, or if it is a cliché, it's because it's true. Clichés tend to be true. That's why they're clichés. They're repeated so many times. It's a fundamental truth that all of us need to know. Husbands need to know it, and women need to know it as well. So this is the idea of ordinary life and seeing the holiness in ordinary life. You know, the Medrash tells us, there's a famous, actually it's a Zohar about Chanoch. If you remember, Chanoch is a very mysterious figure. Chanoch was, it says in Parshas Bereishis, he walked, V'yishalei Chanoch es Elokim. Chanoch walked with God and God took him away. He was taken to Shemayim while he was alive. And there are different interpretations. Some say he was, Rashi says he was a great, great tzaddik, and Hashem was afraid, or Hashem knew he would become Makul Kal, so he took him away. But the Zohar HaKadosh describes that Chanoch was a shoemaker by trade, and every single stitch into the leather, he was uniting the upper worlds and the lower worlds. That by having those kavanas that he was serving Hashem, every little mundane thing became an act of holiness, an act of unification, of gathering up the sparks of holiness. Now, I've been talking for this whole time. I'm sorry. Yes. Omar is Adon. You know, that's very interesting. Yeah, this is just in case people didn't hear it. Yeah, Mar Cheshvan, the suggestion was made here that Mar, in Gemara's Lashon, in Aramaic, refers to a master, etc. So the question, maybe Mar Cheshvan is, you're referring to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Mar, that even in Cheshvan, I have to recognize God as the master, as the king, even in ordinary life, and not only in special life. It's a very, you know, I've never seen that explanation, but you know, it might be a possible one. So you always think about that. Yeah. Yeah. Very good. Yeah. Yeah. No, but that's maybe you're thinking about modern Hebrew, but in the Gemara there's no Gershayim. In the Gemara, Mar is just Right. Well, that's a beautiful thought, and maybe we could even connect it. Maybe we could even say that which we perceive superficially as bitter, we understand ultimately comes from the Master Hashem, and therefore it is good. So it could very well be that both meanings kind of coalesce. It all depends how you look at it. Have you ever seen those pictures? They give it in psychological tests. They draw a cup, and if you look at the cup in one way, you see a human face, and another way you look at a cup. It all depends how you look at things. So Mar, you can look at life as bitter and unhappy. You can look at it all coming from Hashem and having meaning and purpose. So it's the cup, right? It all depends on how you look at your life. So thank you. It's a good suggestion. But the one thing we've been saying all along, obviously, is that Mar Cheshvan doesn't have special times. And the whole purpose is to understand that every day is a special day. But in truth, Mar Cheshvan does have the most special time of all. That is Shabbos. Hashem did not take away Shabbos from us, even in the month of Cheshvan. And it's interesting, one might discuss this. What is the holiest time of the Jewish calendar? So most would say Yom Kippur. However, there are at least two proofs that Shabbos might be a Kedusha that is higher than Yom Kippur. I'll give you two quick proofs. One proof is the number of people who are called to the Torah. On Shabbos, we have 7 people called to the Torah. and then the Maftir, but seven basic aliyahs. Yom Kippur, we have six. Yom Tov, five. Chol HaMoed and Rosh Chodesh, four. Monday and Thursday, three. So Shabbos is higher than Yom Kippur in the number of aliyahs. That's proof number one. Proof number two, Shabbos is more severe in its punishment. If one violates Shabbos at a time when there was a Sanhedrin, and there were the requisite witnesses who gave a person warning, they could be executed. They could be stoned. This was the punishment for Chilul Shabbos. If I violate Yom Kippur, either by doing work or by eating and drinking, Chas V'Shalom, there is a chiyuv of Koresh, death in the hands of heaven, but that's not as severe because if I do tshuva, that gets canceled. Death by a basin does not get canceled. And we always find that the more severe sins are punishable by basin execution rather than Hashem simply giving a person a punishment. So we do have two proofs that Shabbos is actually holier than Yom Kippur. Now, people ask, well, what about the fact that the Torah says in Parshas Acharei Mos that Yom Kippur is Shabbos Shabbason, which is the Shabbos of Shabboses? But that's not really a proof, and I'll tell you why. Shabbos of Shabboses may not be a reference to holiness, but rather the word Shabbat or Shabbos is to refrain. So what we're saying is the following. On a regular Shabbos, I refrain only from work. On Yom Kippur, it's a Shabbos of Shabboses, because not only do I refrain from work, I refrain from eating, drinking, wearing shoes. So Shabbos of Shabboses is not a connotation of relative holiness. It is a connotation of the degree of separation. Be it as it may, there are many Sifrei Hasidus that say that Shabbos is a higher level of holiness than even Yom Kippur. Of course, this year there's no ambiguity. Yom Kippur was on Shabbos, so there's no question that was the holiest day of the year.
Next year the same.
Next year the same. That's right. But be it as it may, whether Shabbos is holier or Shabbos is second, we all take Shabbos for granted. Because Shabbos is the magnificent day of love, closeness to Hashem. Hashem gives us, we know, an extra soul, a neshama yisera. Now, I would redefine it a little bit. Neshama yisera, most people say, means an extra soul. I think the more accurate translation is an enlarged soul. It's not that I have one soul and Hashem gives me another soul and like two things are in me. But rather, a neshama is a capacity to experience godliness. And during the week, our capacity is limited. On Shabbos, our capacity is enlarged. Sorry, I didn't hear you? Okay, I should, all right. I won't move my right hand. Our capacity for spirituality is enlarged and expanded. In fact, it's interesting. Rashi in Maseches Beitza tells us that what is the purpose of the extra soul or the enlarged soul of Shabbos? Rashi says, that's why you can eat and drink more on Shabbos, because you have more of a soul or two souls. Now, that may be a little trivial, right? Of course, the problem is when the extra soul goes away, it doesn't take the extra calories with it. It leaves you with that. But that's almost trivial. The purpose of the extra soul is that I can eat more? But the answer is, Rashi doesn't mean physical food. Do you remember by Matan Torah? It says, when the Jews had a vision of God's divine presence, it says, Vayochlu Vayishtu, they ate and they drank. And the Rambam says in the Mora Nevuchim that eating and drinking meant is soul food. I don't mean collard greens or whatever it is, but the soul food, meaning what does the soul eat? Right? The soul does not eat physical food. But the soul eats experiencing HaKadosh Baruch Hu's closeness. So when Rashi says, this is exactly what Rashi means. When Rashi says, the neshama yisera is an enhanced capacity to eat and drink, Rashi means an enhanced capacity to feel closeness to Hashem. Now I want to warn all of us, and again I'm talking to myself, I don't mean to give any mussar, All spiritual gifts are potentials. Whether they are going to be realized in our lives depends on us. Meaning to say, I'm not going to say Shabbos automatically is going to make me feel closer to Hashem. Hashem creates a capacity within us. But then it depends on what I do with it to be able to feel. Right? I mean, to give you a trivial example, I can give you a cell phone that can have reception anywhere, but you got to turn on the phone. If you don't turn on the phone, the most expensive cell phone is not going to do anything, or radio, whatever it would be, a car. We got to turn it on. And that's what Chazal means, the same expression. Misha Mechen B'Erev Shabbos, the person who prepares on Erev Shabbos shall eat on Shabbos. Once again, it's not a reference to physical food only, although it is true in physical food as well. But it means you want to eat godliness on Shabbos. Got to prepare on Erev Shabbos, etc. That's why many, many people have a very beautiful minhag. You know, not everybody can do it all the time, but they try to set the table either by, some people even do it Thursday night, and some people do it early Friday morning, that the whole Erev Shabbos time is a time in which the spirit of Shabbos permeates. And Baruch Hashem, Bichlal in Eretz Yisrael, Erev Shabbos, I'm still relatively new here, so I still have these impressions because I think of Chutz Laretz. That Erev Shabbos is b'chlal different in Eretz Yisrael. There is really a more of a sense that it's Shabbistic. In Chutz Laretz, the concept was, you know, got home from work half an hour before Shabbos and like Superman and Clark Kent, whatever it is, do a quick change and then go to shul and fall asleep as soon as you get home. Here there already is a sense indeed. And in fact, Rav Soloveitchik used to say that in America, in Europe, there were Shabbos Yidden. And in America there were Shabbos Yidden. But what he didn't see in America was he didn't see Erev Shabbos Yidden. And Baruch Hashem, we have a little bit of Erev Shabbos Yidden here too, but the more we can do, the big difference it would be. And of course, all the Svarim say that precisely when there's a great potential for holiness, the Yetzer Hara tries to create machlokas. And that is why tensions are often very high Erev Shabbos. Funny thing about Erev Shabbos, no matter when Shabbos is, we have tensions. When Shabbos is 4 o'clock in the afternoon, okay, it's a short Friday, we're nervous. When Shabbos is 8 o'clock at night, somehow there's still going to be tension at 7:30. In the winter you could be ready at 4 o'clock, whatever it is. But all of this is part of the Maaseh Yetzer Hara, precisely because Erev Shabbos, there is such a potential to prepare ourselves for the Neshama Yisera of Shabbos. The Yetzer Hara works overtime to destroy the Shalom and destroy. And once again, this is obviously a joint responsibility of husband, wife, parent, child. But once again, part of the Akeres HaBayis is to maybe be the boss in charge of trying to create the atmosphere that pervades Erev Shabbos, that will make a person ready for the Neshama Yisera of Shabbos Kodesh. And it is true, therefore, that on one hand, Cheshvan doesn't have a Yom Tov, but Cheshvan teaches us the beauty of ordinary life, and it also gives us the tools to appreciate the holiness of Shabbos, which in turn is the Makor HaBracha, the source of blessing for all that will happen during the week. In fact, the Or HaChaim HaKadosh tells us, I'll just end here, the Or HaChaim HaKadosh tells us that the world, this is a fascinating way of looking at it, the world is actually created on Shabbos. It's an interesting thing. Because every Shabbos, Hashem puts in the spiritual energy that will keep the world going till next Shabbos. So on Shabbos, we have the koach of Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. And next Shabbos will be the koach for the next week. And that koach depends on how the Jewish people observe Shabbos. And he says, if chas v'shalom, this could never happen, there would be no Jew at all in the world that was keeping Shabbos. The world would not be renewed. The world would just end on Saturday. It would not go on to the next week. Because what keeps the next week going, even in a physical sense, is the spiritual energy that Yidden bring into the world through their Shemira Shabbos. So may HaKadosh Baruch Hu give us all the koach to be inspired by the Yamim Tovim and to take these lessons into the beauty of ordinary life, the beauty of Cheshvan.